welcome, and thank you for joining Rayonier's second quarter 2018 teleconference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And now I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Mark McHugh, Senior Vice President and CFO. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you and good morning. Welcome to Rayonier's Investor Teleconference covering second quarter earnings. Our earnings statements and financial supplement were released yesterday afternoon and are available on our website at rayonier.com. I would like to remind you that in these presentations, we include forward-looking statements made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of federal securities laws. Our earnings release and Form 10-K filed with the SEC lists some of the factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from the forward-looking statements we may make. They're also referenced on page 2 of our financial supplement. Throughout these presentations, we will also discuss non-GAAP financial measures, which are defined and reconciled to the nearest GAAP measure in our earnings release and supplemental materials. With that, let's start our teleconference with opening comments from Dave Nunes, President and CEO. Dave?
Thanks, Mark, and good morning, everyone. First, I'll make some overall remarks before turning it back over to Mark to review our financial results. Then we'll ask Doug Long, our Senior Vice President for Forest Resources, to comment on our U.S. and New Zealand timber results. And following the review of our timber results, Chris Kaur, our Senior Vice President for Real Estate, will discuss our real estate results. We're pleased to report a strong second quarter results reflective of the quality and diversity of our timberlands and real estate portfolio. For the second quarter, we achieved earnings per share of 28 cents and adjusted EBITDA of $111 million, which represents a significant increase from the prior year second quarter. Our Southern Timber segment adjusted EBITDA increased 42% from the prior year second quarter, reflecting 10% higher volumes and a significant increase in non-timber income. The increase in harvest volume was primarily driven by incremental volume from recent acquisitions, coupled with stronger overall demand, while the increase in non-timber income was driven by roughly $6 million of pipeline easement sales. Our Pacific Northwest timber segment reported 36% higher harvest volumes, as well as a 26% lift in average delivered saw timber pricing, driven by continued strengthening in both domestic and export markets. Based on these favorable market conditions, we accelerated some volume that was planned for the second half of the year. This harvest timing, which contributed to the strong second quarter, will result in a comparatively lower harvest level for the balance of the year. We also enjoyed a strong second quarter in New Zealand. Excluding the prior year period timberland sales, adjusted EBITDA in New Zealand increased nearly 40% versus the prior year second quarter, driven by a 20% increase in volume and a 9% increase in both domestic and export saw timber prices. Moving to our real estate segment, results improved significantly over the prior year quarter, primarily reflecting the closing of a timberland sale in Louisiana, as well as continued strong demand for rural HBU properties. As we've stated in the past, this business is all about premium, and we're very pleased to see that our real estate strategy is yielding strong results and meaningfully augmenting our core timberland returns. With that, let me turn it back over to Mark to review our financial results.
Thanks, Dave. Let's start on page 5 with our financial highlights. Sales for the quarter totaled $246 million, while operating income was $52 million, and net income attributable to Rayonier was $36 million, or 28 cents per share. Pro forma EPS was also 28 cents per share, as we had no pro forma items in the quarter. Second quarter adjusted EBITDA of $111 million was significantly above the prior year quarter adjusted EBITDA of $87 million due to favorable results in our Southern Timber, Pacific Northwest Timber, and real estate segments, partially offset by lower results in New Zealand due to the prior year period timberland sales. As Dave noted, excluding these timberland sales, New Zealand timber results also improved significantly. On the bottom of page 5, we provide an overview of our capital resources and liquidity at quarter end, as well as a comparison to year end. Our cash available for distribution, or CAD, for the first half of the year was $164 million compared to $97 million in the prior year period, primarily due to higher adjusted EBITDA, lower cash interest paid, lower cash taxes, and lower capital expenditures. A reconciliation of CAD to cash provided by operating activities and other GAAP measures is provided on page 8 of the financial supplement. We closed the quarter with $107 million of cash and roughly $975 million of debt. Our net debt of $868 million represented 15% of our enterprise value based on our closing stock price at quarter end. Note that these figures exclude $69 million of cash proceeds from Timberland and HBU sales that are currently held by like-kind exchange intermediaries and are therefore classified as restricted cash. I'll now turn the call over to Doug to provide a more detailed review of our timber results.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, everyone. Let's start on page 9 with our Southern Timber segment. Adjusted EBITDA in the second quarter of $31 million was $2 million and $9 million favorable to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. Second quarter harvest volume of approximately 1.5 million tons was 78,000 tons lower than the prior quarter, which we fully expected following the extraordinarily high level of production in the first quarter. The volume increase of 133,000 tons compared to prior year quarter was driven primarily by incremental volume from recent acquisitions, coupled with stronger overall demand. Additionally, it's worth noting that our non-timber sales of $11 million doubled in the second quarter versus the prior year period due to the closing of 3 significant pipeline easements. Second quarter pine pulpwood stumpage prices of $16.05 per ton were 6% unfavorable compared to the prior quarter and 3% favorable compared to the prior year quarter. The decrease in pine pulpwood prices compared to prior quarter was due to geographic mix, the portion of our harvest shifting west, whereas prior year period pulpwood prices were negatively affected by salvage timber from the West Mims fire. Pine saw timber stumpage prices of $26.23 per ton were essentially flat to the first quarter and 2% favorable to the prior year period. While we've continued to see some modest strengthening in coastal markets, overall saw timber pricing in the South has been relatively flat during the last year, with period-to-period differences generally attributable to geographic mix. Hardwood prices of $12.12 per ton were 16% and 4% favorable compared to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. Hardwood markets are very localized and product-specific, so changes in price tend to be driven by both product and geographic mix. Now moving to the Pacific Northwest timber segment on page 10. Adjusted EBITDA of $15 million was $1 million and $9 million favorable to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively. Second quarter harvest volume of 374,000 tons was essentially flat to the prior quarter and 36% higher than the prior year quarter. As Dave mentioned, favorable market conditions for both pulpwood and saw timber afforded us an opportunity to accelerate volume into the second quarter that was otherwise scheduled to be sold during the second half of the year, thus locking in very strong pricing. Delivered saw timber prices of $103.38 per ton were 8% and 26% favorable to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively. The increase in saw timber prices can again be attributed to continued strength in both the export and domestic markets. Delivered pulpwood prices of $49.76 per ton were 12% and 26% favorable compared to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively. The increase in pulpwood prices was driven by strong run rates at West Coast pulp mills, coupled with tension from a growing market for chip exports. Page 11 shows results and key operating metrics for our New Zealand timber segment. Our New Zealand timber segment delivered another very strong quarter. Adjusted EBITDA of $26 million was $4 million favorable compared to the prior quarter, primarily due to higher harvest volumes and favorable export saw timber prices, and $17 million unfavorable compared to the prior year quarter, which included land sales of $24 million. Second quarter harvest volume of 738,000 tons was 32% and 20% higher compared to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively, primarily due to the timing of export shipments and incremental volume from recent acquisitions. Export saw timber prices of $120.80 per ton increased 3% and 9% compared to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively, due to continued strong demand, mainly from China, complemented by India reaching pricing parity. Domestic saw timber prices of $86.21 per ton in U.S. dollar terms were roughly flat compared to the prior quarter and 9% higher compared to the prior year quarter due to continued demand tension between export markets and local sawmills, along with a modest rise in the New Zealand to U.S. exchange rate. Domestic pulpwood prices of $38.28 per ton increased 6% and 15% compared to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively, due to local mills competing with increased demand for lower quality logs from India and China as export customers sought cheaper fiber supplies. In our trading segment, second quarter adjusted EBITDA of $200,000 decreased compared to the prior quarter due to higher costs associated with port congestion. Trading margins continued to tighten in 2018 due to increased competition for log supply and increased shipping costs. I'll now turn it over to Chris to cover real estate. Chris?
Thank you, Doug. As highlighted on page 12, our real estate segment delivered very strong second quarter results. Real estate sales totaled $50 million on 15,804 acres sold, with the activity dominated by a timberland sale in Louisiana. Excluding improved development sales, we generated a weighted average price of $3,071 per acre, representing a significant premium to our timberland hold value. Sales in our improved development category reflect a steady pace of activity at our Wildlight development project. During the quarter, we closed 12 residential lots for a total of $625,000 or $52,000 per lot, and 2 acres of commercial property for $684,000 or $351,000 per acre. In the rural category, sales totaled $4.8 million on 1,071 acres at an average price of roughly $4,500 per acre. We are very pleased with the progress in our Rural Places program, where we closed on 30 lots and 24 separate transactions. Interest in this product continues to build, particularly in Florida and Texas, and we are starting to see a pickup of activity in Louisiana. In the non-strategic and timberlands category, sales of $44 million were comprised of 14,729 acres sold at an average price of roughly $3,000 per acre. This includes a sale of 14,447 acres in Louisiana for $43 million, or roughly $3,000 per acre. Following extraordinarily strong first and second quarters in real estate, we expect much lighter activity during the second half of the year. As we've discussed in the past, our real estate results tend to be lumpy, and this year our activity was heavily concentrated in the first half. That said, we expect activity at our Wildlight development project to continue to build throughout the year with steady progress both on infrastructure, construction, and the sales pipeline. I'll now turn the call back over to Mark.
Thanks, Chris. As noted in our earnings release, based on our year-to-date results and our outlook for the balance of the year, we're increasing our full-year guidance. We now anticipate full-year net income attributable to Rayonier of $82 to $89 million, EPS of 63 cents to 68 cents, and adjusted EBITDA of $300 to $315 million. Additional details regarding our updated guidance, including a reconciliation of adjusted EBITDA to net income and EPS, can be found on Schedule G of our earnings release. With respect to our individual segments, we expect our Southern Timber segment to achieve full-year volume of 5.8 to 5.9 million tons in line with our prior guidance, although we anticipate lower quarterly harvest volumes for the remainder of the year given the strong volumes in the first half. We continue to expect pricing in the South to remain relatively flat this year and then to pick up some momentum as new lumber capacity comes online, primarily in 2019 and 2020. In our Pacific Northwest timber segment, we are likewise on track to achieve our full-year volume guidance of 1.3 to 1.4 million tons with lower quarterly harvest volumes for the balance of the year. We further expect a modest decline in our weighted average stumpage prices in the Pacific Northwest, primarily based on product mix as we move into some more challenging stands. In our New Zealand timber segment, we expect to achieve full-year volume of 2.6 to 2.7 million tons, although we anticipate some softening in export prices during the second half as a result of the ongoing trade tensions between the U.S. and China. While New Zealand log exports are not directly impacted by tariffs, the general market uncertainty created by the U.S.-China trade situation, as well as the impact of potential tariffs on some manufactured wood products flowing from China to the U.S., have caused some pullback in the log export market. We believe that fundamental export market conditions remain favorable, and we're continuing to monitor the situation closely. Lastly, in our real estate segment, we expect very light activity in the third and fourth quarters following an extraordinarily strong first half of the year. Additional details regarding volume, adjusted EBITDA, and operating income by segment can be found on page 14 of our financial supplement. I'll now turn the call back to Dave for closing comments.
Thanks, Mark. Overall, we're very pleased with the quarter as it represents our strongest quarterly adjusted EBITDA result since the spinoff of the Performance Fibers business in 2014. I'm very proud of how our team executed on our operational strategies and worked well together to deliver these strong results. We've always stressed the importance of remaining nimble both in our operational as well as our capital allocation priorities, and we certainly put that philosophy into action during the second quarter as we took advantage of favorable market conditions across each of our segments. We'll continue to employ this mindset going forward as we seek to maximize value for shareholders over the long term. To this end, during the second quarter, we announced an 8% increase in our quarterly cash dividend from 25 cents to 27 cents per share, effective for the second quarter distribution. This action reflects our significant cash flow growth, strong capital structure, and continued confidence in the sustainability of our businesses. It further reflects our commitment to nimble capital allocation as we seek to build long-term value per share. And that concludes our prepared remarks. We'll now turn the call back over to the operator for questions.
Thank you. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Our first question today is from Anthony Pettinari from Citi.
Good morning. This is actually Randy Toll sitting in for Anthony. Compared to expectations at the beginning of the year, it seems like full-year EBITDA guidance has risen in all segments except for New Zealand. Can you talk about what's driving that mild EBITDA cut in New Zealand?
Yeah, you know, like we discussed, we've seen a bit of softening in the export market conditions there. You know, again, obviously New Zealand is not directly impacted by any kind of tariffs associated with the U.S.-China trade situation, but there are manufactured wood products in China that flow to the U.S. that have been on the list of potential tariffs. And so, you know, again, we think that the overall construction market in China remains robust and that, again, fundamental export market conditions remain healthy, but we've just seen a little bit of skittishness in the market as a result of these recent trade developments.
You also have some influence from recent currency flows that have made wood more expensive there based on the New Zealand currency. And so that's had some modest impact, and we've seen just a little tick up in inventories of late.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just staying on kind of the China theme, what are you seeing as far as the port inventories and offtake rates?
Yeah, I can speak to that. So log exports, you know, set a record last year in 2017, and they're on track again this year. And we saw a really large buildup in the first quarter. But after Chinese New Year, we've seen inventory levels in China have fallen dramatically over the second quarter. And as we've discussed before, we believe tracking inventory demand ratio is more important than just the inventory levels. And this ratio currently sits within 1.5 to 2 month range that we feel is a very comfortable and healthy level. During Q1, it had built up to over 3.5 months. So we've seen a significant drop down from where we're at, and we feel like it's in a pretty healthy level right this minute.
Okay, perfect. I'll turn it over. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Colin Mings from Raymond James.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
First question, just on New Zealand. Can you quantify the pressure in pricing you've seen today coming off of the some of the weakness that you talked about?
Yeah, Colin, this is Doug. I'd say so far the pressure on pricing we've seen has been pretty much attributable to the devaluation of the currency, so it's been kind of in that ballpark of things. We have seen a little bit of additional impacts of freight costs, just we see more port congestion, both in New Zealand and China, with the increase that I mentioned before there on log exports. So to date, it's been relatively around that devaluation of currency and a slight tick, as Dave mentioned before, in freight type things. Right now, it's more just that's what we've kind of put our guidance along with some that just general uncertainty that Mark mentioned about kind of finished products going back.
Gotcha. So it sounds like some of the guidance adjustment is more just forward looking that you think there could be continued pressure versus necessarily a meaningful correction in pricing here recently. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, that'd be fair to say.
Okay. And then just sticking with New Zealand, I recognize there are some limitations on what you can probably say at this juncture, but can you just update us on the status of the Fonos process and your level of engagement at this point? And then, Dave, maybe just more broadly, it looks like you guys acquired some timberland in New Zealand during the quarter. Can you touch on that?
Sure. Just as a refresher, you know, Fonos, our partner in New Zealand, is a publicly traded timber fund listed in the UK. Their shareholders voted to wind down their fund last summer. They had their board and manager resigned in the ensuing 6 months, and then earlier this year, the new board began executing a plan for an orderly sale of those assets. Stafford, the former manager, recently made an unsolicited offer for all of Fonos, which has certainly complicated the process that their board was undertaking. Fonos is now in the process of finalizing its defense statement, and ultimately it's going to boil down to shareholders either committing to the Stafford offer or rejecting it, in which case the Fonos board will proceed with the completion of its asset sale process. We certainly have not made it clear that we have an interest in owning that remaining 23% stake, but at the right price. And we continue to monitor the situation, and we believe it's going to ultimately resolve itself over the next several months.
Okay. And then just as far as the, again, it looks like there was some timberland acquired, again, both in New Zealand and in the U.S. South, particularly here in Florida. Just maybe touch on the acquisitions during the quarter.
Sure. It wasn't a heavy quarter. We acquired just under 15,000 acres for $31 million. The bulk of that was an acquisition that we did here in coastal Florida that we were excited about, just under 14,000 acres. It was a sale that we bought for roughly a little over $1,800 an acre. And one of the things that we stress internally is having an active portfolio management engagement in the market, whether it's on the buy side or the sell side. And we recently sold a property fairly proximate to this one at roughly 2x the per acre value. And so we felt fortunate that we were able to essentially replace that acreage at a significantly lower price. And so we're pretty happy with that. And then in New Zealand, we had a small bolt-on acquisition of about 845 gross acres that, again, we're happy to continue looking for those small bolt-on opportunities where we feel we can add some value and do so at a low operating cost.
Perfect. Thank you for the color there. And then just one last one, and I'll turn it over. Just, Doug, I mean, you've touched on seeing some year-over-year improvements in log pricing in certain markets, recognizing it's only been maybe a month and a half as far as seeing this pullback in lumber pricing. But are there any customers that are using that as a reason on the margin to maybe try and knock pricing down a little bit, given some of those markets where maybe you've experienced gains over the last year or so?
Colin, I would say that there's always people try to do everything in a negotiation strategy. So, yeah, anyone's going to use any tactic they have. But we haven't seen prices retreating based on those lumber prices yet. The southern mills are obviously, and the western mills are obviously having nice margins given the current prices, even with the retreat that we've had. So that's always a discussion in price negotiations, but we haven't seen that reflect prices.
Great. I'll turn it over. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ketan Mamtora from BMO Capital Markets.
Thank you. First question, can you provide an update on kind of progress on log exports out of U.S. South? You've talked about kind of that number going up meaningfully off of small base, but kind of what the progress is there?
Sure. As you say, it started a small base, but we've seen exports in the South in general, really growing quite rapidly, as you probably read in recent press releases. So, I think the latest things I've seen that in 2017 in the South in general, we're over 1 million cubic meters just in the first half of the year, whereas we did about 1.2 million across the South in 2017. So it's been an extreme increase as we go forward. For us, as we look at where we've been at, our two resource units proximate to the ports, over a third of our salt timber volume was exported. And with three-quarters of our southern land base within 100 routed miles of ports in the U.S. South, in the first 6 months of this year, we've already surpassed our total 2017 harvest export volume. So we've already, in the first 6 months, essentially did what we did last year. So we're on track doubling what we did last year and continue to improve upon that.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. Second question, do you anticipate, and I appreciate when you talked about the New Zealand kind of export price pressure, a lot of that was due to trade issues and it's more kind of forward-looking. But do you anticipate any ripple effects into kind of the U.S. export log market or kind of that works on different dynamics?
it's hard to guess what's going to happen in a trade war, but I think one of the important things is that the logs coming out of both the South Pacific Northwest are used primarily in the construction industry over in China. And we've recently seen China announce that as kind of one of the tools they're going to work against the trade war is increasing infrastructure spending, particularly in rural areas of China. So it would seem counterproductive to put tariffs on logs that are going to work in that process, but it's hard to predict what's going to happen in a trade war also.
Yes, so Caitlin, it's important to note that a lot of the radiata going into China gets used in the manufacturing of plywood, again, which is on the list of potential tariffs with respect to the U.S. and China. So there is a different use in a lot of the logs going into China versus some of the New Zealand logs going into China.
Okay, understood. That's very helpful. And last question, there has been, you know, some press recently around reworking the Endangered Species Act. Do you think there is any possibility that the federal lands could be opened again in the Pacific Northwest for harvest? I mean, for most of us, we haven't seen that at all in the last, you know, 25 to 30 years, but do you think there is any possibility that could happen?
That would surprise us. I think that you know, recognize that you have virtually no manufacturing capacity in place that could even handle that wood if it were to occur. And I think that we've just gone too far down that line, you know, from a policy standpoint. So I think that's not something that we think is really on the horizon.
Okay, very helpful. I'll turn it over. Good luck in the back half of the year.
Thank you. Our next question is from John Babcock from Bank of America.
Hey, good morning. Just two quick questions here. The first, it's obviously wildfire season here. Just want to get a sense for, you know, what you're seeing in your markets, if there's been any risk there. You know, then kind of the next question I had was just on the timberland markets, but if you could just kind of talk on that first point, that'd be great.
Sure. With respect to the wildfire seasons, we've seen some impacts, particularly in our Oregon properties, where we've been putting on some restrictions, so we can only work till 1 p.m. So that's starting to cause some supply dynamics, basically, as people can't work a full day. So that's primarily we've seen impacts in the Northwest. It hasn't been significant yet, but it appears to be building. It's an early fire season, and obviously you can see in the press that we've had a lot of issues, and there's quite a few large fires in Oregon as we speak, so we're starting to see that come forward.
Okay, great. And then, you know, just my last question before I kind of turn it over, if you could just talk about kind of the activity in the timberland acquisition markets, you know, how is kind of availability out there? You know, are there a number of properties for sale that might be interesting? You know, any sort of information around that would be helpful. Thanks.
Sure. I mean, we generally don't comment on prospective M&A activity, but having said that, you know, I think it is a pretty active season right now, pretty much in all three of the geographies that we're operating in. So we're pretty busy right now assessing a number of potential opportunities, and some of this really gets back to just, you know, we feel like we're really well positioned with a strong balance sheet and a fair bit of capacity to do so, but you know, we're going to remain pretty disciplined. As I mentioned earlier, this last quarter and this year has been pretty light, and that's not been a function of just not seeing properties for sale. It's just been a function of kind of sticking to the disciplined approach that we've used on acquisitions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Steve Cherkover from Davidson.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. So, first of all, with respect to the earnings guide, you know, you've already got 59 cents in your pocket. So you're suggesting that you're going to generate 4 to 9 cents in the second half. So are you just going to cut high basis wood, or, I mean, how does it drop off that much?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a function, Steve, of having taken a lot of that, you know, the EBITDA in the front half of the year. You know, recognize there is, you know, Op Inc. leverage to incremental harvest, and there's a lot of Op Inc. leverage to the real estate sales. And so as those taper off, you know, for example, you're going to have the same, roughly the same level of interest expense in the second half of the year as you do in the first half of the year, but you've got a lot more Op Inc. in the first half of the year. And so it's really just a function of as you scale back that EBITDA, having taken a lot of that forward, it just translates into lower EPS. And we've got a pretty detailed reconciliation, you know, again, recognizing that, you know, this is an area in which there has been a disconnect from time to time in terms of, you know, the actual math to get down to EPS from the research analysts and the guidance. We try to be pretty explicit about that guidance. And so we have the detailed kind of step down from adjusted EBITDA to net income and EPS. And I'm happy to walk you through that in more detail offline.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, right now the consensus is for a combined 25 cents in the second half. And then maybe this
well,
would be...
Yeah, but see, that also we I think we are well above this quarter. So, again, it is just a function of a lot of that real estate activity in particular, which has a high op inc contribution, just came in the first half of the year. And so, like, we try to shy away from sort of managing towards quarterly earnings, but really kind of managing to maximize value. And, you know, we take those opportunities when we get them. We saw some real market strength in the first half of the year. We pulled forward some volume in the Pacific Northwest, but that doesn't mean that we're going to go cut what we otherwise plan to cut in the second half of the year. We're managing towards annual targets, and we're trying to kind of optimize the economics of the business during the course of the year.
Understood. Okay, thanks. And then my second one, like I said, it could be a little bit of a long shot, but China's put an embargo on recycled fiber. I'm sure you know that. And it clearly provides a boost to virgin fiber. And I'm just wondering, you know, as you move down through the ecosystem, can it provide an opportunity for you to sell them chips or even pulpwood out of any of your geographies?
Yeah, Steve, this is Doug. You're right. That's definitely something we're watching. We've heard a lot about Chinese buyers for some potentially shuttered pulp mills right now. We're looking at trying to move the pulp itself into their markets to replace that. But we've also seen very much interest, particularly off of the West Coast, and as I mentioned, you know, also New Zealand, and even in the South about pulp opportunities. So we're exporting pulp right now to Turkey, but we've seen inquiries about pulp to Asia from the South also. So it's definitely something that over the next few years seems to be a developing trend that we're monitoring.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mark Weintraub from Buckingham Research.
Thank you. So two quick questions. One, on the timberland sales that you're seeing out there, is this primarily an auction type processes, or are you talking about more situations where it's you and maybe a contiguous owner, et cetera?
It's really both. We're always in discussions with neighbors, whether it's on the buy side or the sell side. Those are obviously logical situations, and then there's always a decent mix of negotiated sales versus auction situations, and different sellers have different preferences around doing that. And, you know, it's our job to sort of understand both the landscape there in terms of properties that may or may not be for sale, as well as the preference of those owners in terms of how they take it to market.
And in those situations where it is more auction process, is there any shifts that you could describe as to what seems to be going on in the processes relative to what we've been seeing in the last couple of years? I realize that's a tough question to answer, but any color you could give.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that, Mark, in terms of what's going on in those processes? I mean, they remain very competitive. I mean, we certainly haven't seen demand for timberland properties, you know, trailing off. And in fact, you know, we haven't been very successful in auction processes in the last couple of years.
And that's really what I was trying to get at is, I mean, you haven't been very successful because it's been so competitive. Is there any reason to think that you're that much more likely to be successful in the auction type processes, or if I assume if it still remains very competitive, it's more likely you're going to be in the more private type of negotiated transactions?
Yeah, and I'd say the bulk of the transaction, the bulk of the activity that we have acquired has been in negotiated transactions, no question. That doesn't mean that we don't still take a crack at auctions, and we have a low batting average there that we're proud of. You don't want to have a high batting average in auctions, frankly.
Right. And then lastly, when we look at the timber volumes that you're laying out for in the guidance, how do they compare to what you would expect in the next year or two? Are these sort of run rate levels, or are they a little high, a little low?
Yeah, I mean, they're generally trend run rate levels, Mark. I mean, you know, we do have a commitment to operating on a sustainable yield basis. You know, you will see some peaks and valleys just based on your age class profile, kind of relative to that long-term sustainable yield. But, you know, again, we disclose the long-term sustainable yield in our 10K in each of our different segments. And so you can kind of see where our current harvest is relative to those sustainable yields. But for the most part, it's in the range. It's probably a little bit towards the higher end of that range in New Zealand this year. It's at the lower end of that range in the Pacific Northwest as we're still sort of building back up from the you know, the inventory issues of a few years ago. And in the South, I'd say, you know, we're still sort of at the early stages of kind of lifting that harvest over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think tracking, you know, 4 billion board feet of additional capacity, about 3 billion of that kind of in our operating area, I think it pays to be a little bit patient as we think about what those can mean for future years. So we're in the process of lifting things in the South, but not inspired to do it right this second.
Okay, and just specific to the Pacific Northwest, I wasn't quite sure how to interpret. I think you mentioned you had accelerated some in the first half of the year, and then we're kind of keeping at expected rates in the second half. So is the full year harvest in Pacific Northwest going to be a little bit higher than you anticipated? And then what happens next year if that were the case, or that's not the case? You're basically in line with what you were originally anticipating.
Yeah, we're in line with what we were originally anticipating. We just took more of that full-year harvest target in the first half of the year, given the strong market conditions. So, again, we have updated guidance by segment in the financial supplement, and that reflects our current expectation of full-year harvest. And alongside that, we provided the year-to-date levels.
Got it. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And our next question is from Chip Dillon from Vertical Research.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you. Question I have, could you just remind me again why the tariff issue is an issue for New Zealand but not for the Pacific Northwest, especially given, you know, that the tariff would be applied to the logs in the Northwest and not to New Zealand? We would think.
Yeah, Chip, the issue or the perspective issue, and recognize it's not kind of locked in, the perspective issue or the concern is that it's in the form of finished products coming back, particularly plywood, and recognize that, you know, roughly 30% of our New Zealand volume goes into plywood, whether it's a softwood core that's part of a hardwood face and back or a full softwood sheet. So that's probably where there's the biggest theoretical or potential exposure is on that front. And then, you know, I think that keep in mind that certainly some of what we were discussing earlier with respect to guidance was also a reflection of kind of the currency change as well as kind of shipping conditions.
That makes sense. I gotcha. And then what that means kind of in reverse is that if they do slap a tariff on our timber going into China, a lot of what they buy from the Northwest, they can't get anywhere else, I would imagine. So
yeah, we don't see it as much of tariff being slapped on logs. It's more of a flow through effect. If there's a tariff on products coming back, then it's going to have a ripple effect back through to the log volumes.
Makes total sense. Gotcha. And then just shifting gears to real estate, you mentioned you've had a pretty active first half. I know you've done some higher value sales you mentioned earlier in the call, and I guess they're slowed down. But given sort of the robustness of the economy, et cetera, what would sort of be a range of expectations for next year, especially beyond just the kind of the normal pace of the rural or lower value HBU sales?
I don't think we're ready to talk to next year yet, Chip, but You know, what we've talked about in the past is that, you know, we generally expect to sell in the range of 1.5% of our southern land base on an annual basis. And, you know, that's not really a target as much as it is, you know, just what we've experienced historically on average. And so, you know, I think that, you know, give or take, you kind of go into a year expecting that we're going to sell, you know, 20 to 30,000 acres of land into those HBU channels. And really kind of, you know, as we get closer to the specific time frame, we have a better sense as to what that specific pipeline looks like.
I gotcha. And then last thing is, as you think about the I know you just as you think about allocating capital right now, when you look at the areas you mainly operate in, would you find it more or less on average better to buy timber through your stock or through the open market, just sort of looking at where your stock is and looking at what the asking prices are, you know, recognizing that each transaction is unique, but just in a general sense?
Yeah, I mean, Chip, you answered your own question. I mean, it's so hard to answer that. It really is. Every transaction is unique. We look at it on a very transaction-specific basis. I don't think we have a broad point of view as we sit here today that there is a you know, strong difference between kind of the broad timberland M&A market and kind of the share buyback market.
But keep in mind, you know, we're always making that comparison on transactions where we look at the trade-off of the implicit return based on where our stock's trading, and converting that into an IRR compared to an acquisition. So we're always mindful of that trade-off as we look at any transaction.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and I am showing no further questions at this time.
All right, well, thanks, everybody. This is Mark McHugh. If you have any questions, feel free to follow up with me. Thank you.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.